T-minus 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Launch Sequence Podcast, folks. We've got a good episode for you today. A lot of news has come out about Star Citizen over the last 7 to 10 days. We're detailing the monthly report development that's been going on, updates coming in 3.23, and kind of a good look at, I think, the rate they want to be at for the rest of the year. So I brought in one of the other star map, or sorry, the roadmap obsessors, the addicts of Star Citizen development, Tree0311, coming in here off his own podcast. Thank you for joining me, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Of course.
07, everybody. Good to see everybody in chat.
07 Space Nerds. It's always great to have somebody who hosts a podcast in here, because I can kind of just, you know, if I want to, I could just pass it on to you. Hey, you can take over for the next couple minutes. I'm going to go to the bathroom. Now, I appreciate you being on here, dude. We were just on Captain's Table together. Is that last week?
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Last Saturday, but the one before, I think.
Okay, yeah. Before the knowing. Before we got inundated with Star Citizen information. And now we have a lot more to talk about. So I thought we could have a good conversation kind of about the information we're getting. It's ridiculously hyped. Obviously, it's the highest level of hype we've had since CitizenCon, and possibly before that, because now we know we're actually getting the features. But it also kind of could feel like other years to people. So I thought we'd talk about what might make this year different, what we see coming, how it's going to affect the game, and just dive a little bit more into the details. But before we get started, do you want to let everybody know, I kind of already spilled the beans, why you're here, what kind of content you make, how you cover Star Citizen?
Yeah, I am Tree0311, and it's Tree0311. That is me on YouTube and on Twitch, really easy to find. And then it's Tree0311-SC on Twitter. We don't call it X in my house. And I stream often enough. I don't have a regular schedule because that's my life, my real life job. But I produce two podcasts, the Pathfinders podcast, where my friend Nazareth and I, we follow the development of Star Citizen and Squadron 42, as well as just CIG in general, in great detail. The monthly reports, the roadmap roundups, the progress tracker when it's actually getting updated, everything that CIG puts out. Our last podcast, we looked at their financials that they put out at the end of last year, because there's a lot of really interesting information that provides really great context to the entire scope of development, as well as the growth of the studio. And then the second podcast I do is with military members from the Star Citizen community, looking at aspects of Star Citizen from a more veteran perspective, not veteran gamer, but military veteran, because there's a lot of sort of sim light that goes on, and it's pretty fun to look at it from that perspective. Everything I do is charity driven. I keep no monetization for myself. I donate 100% of what I earn to stackup.org, and we're always raising money on my streams for stackup.org. So if you want to support veterans and their mission of combating PTSD through gaming and the power of gaming communities, come and hang out with us. We'd love to see you and talk and hang out. My Discord is always open. It's pretty active, so lots of good conversation and information in there too.
Cool, man. It's a good cause, and also appreciate the work you do when it comes to tracking the roadmap, monthly report and stuff. It's Star Citizen is a very pretty game, so it's easy to just go and make videos and stuff about that. But tracking the development is something that is pretty hard to do, and not enough people cover the specifics, I think, like dive into the details of some of the spots. Even myself, I generalize on a lot of it. So it's nice to have a reliable place to go for that.
And it's something I enjoy, and it's something I can do in my downtime when I'm at work. I don't get to as much. I'm a dad, and I work full. I have a full-time job. I'm in the Army National Guard. I'm busy. I don't get the game as much as I'd like, but I do have downtime at my jobs and stuff where I can read, and so that's what I do, is I read, and or I rewatch videos and, you know, do it and do that sort of stuff. But I think one thing I really appreciate is because what I do is really influenced, and I think by what you do, especially with like your big deep dives that you do, and you go back and you look at all the different videos and the dev statements that they've made, you know, about features and technology that's being developed, it helps put that into context. And so a lot of the times what I'll do is I'll watch your videos and be like, okay, here's where you went and you found what was said on SCL, ISC, Around the Verse, 10 for the Chairman even. And I will correlate that with what's been said in monthly reports and things on the roadmap and the progress tracker, because there's a lot of little things, you know, little context things that are really hard to find. But if you can put it into a one great big picture, it gives a lot of perspective, but it also helps me with managing my own expectations. So
yeah, I think that's part of,
I think it helps others.
Definitely. And that's part of what we're going to see today. We go over all these features that I think there is a lot of joint effort between them, but you can really tell that it's coming together from many different places in the company. And it's hard to, it's hard to be able to be like, okay, 3.23 is going to be this kind of update, because you know, this development was happening in May and that was happening in July. And this happened even 2 years ago, but it seems like this team got updated on this in December. It's like, there's so many scattered things to try and put these things together. And, that's the true game of Star Citizen, is trying to figure out the speculation rather than playing it. No, but it's great to
grand
have.
Strategy.
Right. It's a 4X game for speculation. But it's great to have a project that you can play and also read so much about, like you said. Like, there are plenty of games that I've loved, but I really only loved them because I came home and played them. It's not because I was actually interested in figuring out how they were made. And that's a good way to, you know, make work a little bit better. How many of you are on this podcast at work? I know you're there. I know you're doing it. Get back to work.
I do too. Watching. It's not wrong. It's okay.
And if you're a manager, then your employees are watching you. All right, let's jump into a little bit more of the deep introduction. You were on the Launch Sequence episode 100, but you didn't get to give an actual introduction to kind of how you got to this point. I like to do this for people who come on to the show for the first time. How did you get into Star Citizen?
I don't want to say it, but I'm an OG Chris Roberts fan. And while, you know, affinity for a particular developer wanes over time, and it's really more about the products they put out, the original Wing Commander game was my very first PC game. And so I have just insane amounts of nostalgia from Wing Commander as a kid. You know, I built a PC with my dad to play that game specifically, because I played it at my cousin's house, and my dad's like, well, if you want to play it, we need to build you a computer. And so it was something we did together, and it's one of my, you know, core memory ding. And, you know, I played Freelancer and all that, and I've always been a giant space nerd. I love anything and everything space sci-fi. You know, I like sci-fi in general, but space sci-fi is really, really my bag. If it's got spaceships and going around to different star systems and aliens, what have you, that's my thing.
What gets better than that?
It doesn't.
You want to have your fantasy game? Put it on one of the planets.
Uh-huh. Yep. So yeah, that's, I found out about Star Citizen. I really, you know, I was a struggling paramedic early in my career when, ages ago, when the Kickstarter happened. I didn't have the money to kickstart, but I did end up backing several months later. So I'm an original backer. You know, I've like everybody else, my interest has come and gone a bit over the years, you know, as it's been a bumpy development. It's been a bumpy ride, and I had my confidence shaken multiple times. And but every time I've come back to the development, I've caught up on the development and gone back and read things, and because I enjoy seeing how the soup is made. Mm-hmm. So
you've taken breaks from the game over time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Especially as other game, you know, space games, sci-fi games have come on and taken my attention for a bit, or, you know, gotten frustrated with the progress or lack thereof, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, I think taking breaks is super healthy. It's,
oh yeah.
Yeah. It's the fall in the development is always interesting, but at the same time it does get frustrating. But, I think my mental health with playing the game is probably done a big favor by my, especially in recent years, how busy I've been as an adult. You know, it's, I only get so much time to play. If I played, you know, as much as I did or wanted to play, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, I'd probably be a lot more frustrated. So I totally sympathize with people who really want to play this as their daily game and being frustrated by it, you know. But I don't get a daily game. I get to play a game,
yeah,
a few hours a week.
Yeah. I mean, that's really, you know, for a lot of people want this to be a main game, and I want it to be my main game. But it does feel like the kind of game that, you know, you're not playing every day. You just jump in maybe once a week or twice a week with friends. And I think it's going to be an absolutely amazing experience for that kind of thing. And part of our frustration with it right now is, yeah, the game's not that developed, but also we just have so little content that we're constantly trying to play the same thing over and over, same day, every other day. And that starts to add to the frustration along with the delays and stuff like that. So I get that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Totally sympathize. I get it.
You mentioned that you had other games that you played that came up. I did too. Cyberpunk was a really big one that I was hoping was going to be my main game when it came out. Starfield was also one of those. Are other games around. There are other games that I'm a fan of or that I follow that I like. Universe Sim is one I just was watching that just came out of early access. 10 years? Decade of early access. I don't think anybody's ever called it a scam, but it took a while.
What?
Yeah.
Who does that?
And it's a great game. I like it. There are other games around like that. But I was doing some research for a video coming up for supporters. And it starts out with this sort of infographic that somebody made back in 2017. Give you guys a little flash from the past as to the extent at which people say that other games will take all of the attention from this. One of the things on that infographic that was kind of supposedly contributing to the downfall of Star Citizen was the launch of Mass Effect Andromeda. And that was one of those games for me that I wanted to... Yeah.
Yep.
I remember the original trailer for that. It was like the guys flipping between the different planets and being like, oh, I'm going to go there. And I was like, yes, I want that. And that didn't really happen.
Oh, I overhyped myself for Andromeda badly, and I never ended up finishing it because my disappointment with it, you know, even after they made improvements and stuff, and that's, you know, partly my own fault because I overhyped myself for it and I thought it was going to be something different and something more like what you talked about. I played all the Mass Effects, you know, 1, 2, and 3, one of my favorite series of all time, you know, played the multiple playthroughs. Yeah. You know, it's the Mass Effect series 1, 2, and 3 is one of the seminal, sci-fi, you know, game series out there. And
it's like the pinnacle.
In every way, shape or, oh yeah. Yeah. It's
for RPGs, at least in the modern.
Yeah.
World,
for, like. Oh yeah. For RPGs, you know, for space, you know, for sci-fi content. The story, the universe, the characters, it just, you know, chef's kiss. You know, that in Dragon Age was BioWare at its peak. Yeah.
Sad, man. You know, the lead writer, or maybe not lead writer, but one of the major narrative folks for Andromeda is brought on for the second Cyberpunk game. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh.
Also, though, they wrote Star Wars Rogue One, so...
I mean, we all have off days or years.
off projects. Yeah, I don't remember the writing of Andromeda, but the general direction of it wasn't my favorite. So are you playing any games recently? Or are you all Star Citizen now?
Oh, I have always, one thing that, you know, and I've, there are two Star Citizen content creators I have been following since the beginning, and one is you and two is Paul. And one thing that Paul has always said is that, you know, show me a Star Citizen content creator who isn't a variety creator or streamer, what have you. And I think it's super healthy to play multiple games. I don't follow the development of other games like I do Star Citizen because that's not possible. There's not enough time, you know, in the day. But I do play a lot of other games because I really enjoy indie games. And I enjoy co-op games. Like as much as I love sci-fi and space games, I've always been much more of a fan of playing with others. You know, so a single player is great playing by yourself, but it's so much more fun when you can get together with especially if you have a community or other friends that you game with. I mean, that's why I raise money for Stack Up, because I always tell everybody during the podcast that this is my therapy, whether it's doing the podcast or, you know, getting together with members of the community and playing a game. You know, we have co-op game nights. We try to do it at least once or twice a month. And we'll pick a game off the list, and we'll get as many people together to play it, and we'll have a good time. But
that's nice.
Yeah, it's great fun, and I want Star Citizen to be more approachable for that, because I think it's going to take co-op PvE to a level that we haven't really had in gaming really ever. But I love, just yesterday, Helldivers 2 released, and I've been a fan of the original Helldivers since its launch. I go, you know, come and go with it all the time. And so I played a bunch of that yesterday while my kid was napping, and it's great fun. Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. It is, and it's hysterical. If you want to yeah. watch someone play a game and laugh, it's so good. Starship Troopers Extermination is just an awesome game to play with the community. It is so much fun because it's up to 16 people. You can have like four fire teams and take up, you know, the whole map with your community. It's great. Things like Deep Rock Galactic, that's another one I really enjoy. But then anything space, you know, if it's got spaceships in it, I've probably played it and have a couple dozen hours in it. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that's recent. But more recently, definitely the co-op games. Killing Bugs? Yeah. Oh, Rogue Trader.
Did you tell me about that?
I think we were talking about, we're talking about it a bit on Paul's show. But like you, I'm a big fan of RPGs, and Rogue Trader is a really great time in terms of being an RPG like that. But I also, it's the squad based tactics are a lot of fun. I really enjoy those types of games.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I like to get that answer, because it feels like everybody comes from different places and is playing different stuff. You talk to some people and they'd be like, yeah, I dropped Destiny and then I pick up Star Citizen. Somebody else would be like, oh yeah, I was just, you know, kicking around in Project Gotham Racing, which is a throwback. I don't know why I picked that as the racing game. But you said that Star Citizen's a little therapeutic for you. How have the last couple weeks of announcements been going then? What are those? It's like a long 5-hour session.
Yeah, it's, we were just talking about this in the pre-podcast, but the amount of, and really since the last ISC of 2023, where Jared did his wish list at the end, is what Naz and I were calling it, Nazareth and I, because at first I was, you know, as hyped as I was after CitizenCon, it was very much, okay, this is what they want to get out in the next 12 months. All right, well, we've heard that before, and yeah, it looks really far along, but you know, Jared talked about show not tell.
Yeah,
okay, show me where the progress is on these things and getting them into the PU, because a lot of what they showed us was, hey, this is what it looks like in Squadron. Okay, great, Squadron looks amazing. I'm sure Squadron's going to be amazing. Where's the progress on moving these features over to the PU? Because that's one thing that, and I've tried to put into context for a lot of people, is that it isn't, hey, they're working, you know, I hate that quote, but many people have said 90% of CIG is working on Squadron. It's not true, but B, a lot of those people are working on shared features. But at the same time, okay, if you're building this feature that's for both games, there's still a lot of work on the back end that has to be done to migrate it over and make it work in a multiplayer environment. As much as CIG has touted the similarities in the way Squadron work runs to how the Persistent Universe runs, where Squadron runs essentially almost a localized version of the server, you know, and it maintains like a server client relationship, it's still a lot of work to make that work across a network and environment versus on your client, your PC right there in front of you, and it's only talking it to itself. So it's, we need to be shown that progress of moving those features and all that development time on these features in a closed environment. Okay, how's that pan out? And this is our 323 is really going to be our first look into how smooth or how not smooth does that process go. And I'm super hyped because that feature list is long. They're swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
First at bat in the game, and they're like, all right, you know, call them a shot. And okay, let's see how it works.
It's the kind of thing that they put out and people are like, no, I don't believe you. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't, you're not, no, that's not actually happening. It's a lot.
Yeah. If I hadn't seen it at CitizenCon, I'd be a lot more dubious.
Well, that's...
But
that's
they did a really good job of presenting it at CitizenCon. It's like, all right, these features look great. Okay. What's, you know, what's this next year going to look like?
And that's a big part of where we are in the company now, is that this isn't previous years where they had a list or maybe even had like some concept images or a little bit of in-game footage that they would show us for the feature and then kind of just stop talking about the feature. They introduced the features at CitizenCon and they have not stopped talking about them. Last year, CitizenCon, they did the same thing. Similarly, they had that long talk with Richard and Chris, and they showed us some clips of some features, and then CitizenCon itself also showed some stuff. But after that, there was nothing. It was just mentioned in the letter from the chairman. And then from there, it was kind of hype, and we were going through those early stages of last year. No sprint reports. We only got one in the whole first half. Road to 4.0 ISCs that weren't really about the actual features we had seen at CitizenCon. Just in general, the communication didn't give us a lot of confidence that that stuff was coming along. And by the summertime, we were like, okay, this is not, it's not looking great. Communication has broken down around server meshing. These features haven't shown up in any PTUs or ISC. Is it hype? This year, though, we're seeing these things being played in real time by these developers. We're seeing them inside Star Citizen. They're in the monthly reports and have been for a while. They're on the roadmap. Roundup, like it's much more quantifiable now than it was a year ago, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The way I try and explain it to people is, you know, it's kind of like, triangulating your position with, GPS, and, you know, like the more satellites that have a view of you, the more accurate the positioning is. Well, it's same thing with Star Citizen's development. The more places within the information that they put out to us that can corroborate, you know, where something is in terms of development. Oh, I just heard somebody hop into the chat.
Yeah, people can hop in.
Oh, okay.
We're in an open room.
Oh, gotcha. I was like, what was that noise? but yeah, like you just said, the last year they let the sort of like the trough between waves get, to me, a little bit too deep.
It was big.
And it made it really difficult because we didn't have the satellites above us giving us a really good idea of where we were in terms of, like, you know, in terms of progress on these things. You know, the monthly reports are still reporting. Monthly reports, that's one thing that Naz and I were talking about, is they were really vague on the monthly reports because they were so hell-bent on not spoiling things for CitizenCon.
Yeah.
They're just making generalized statements in the monthly report saying this is what they're working on and repeating it very similarly. There's very few specifics. So it was like, and then you were, yeah, like you said, we weren't getting the ISC sprint reports to show things. And so it made it really hard to come on. And they knocked it out of the park with CitizenCon. And now they have really set the bar pretty high for themselves on maintaining that momentum to avoid a trough like we had last year. And I think last week's ISC really did that. But then I think the other part that was really encouraging is what they, Nazareth put out the skit. He mentioned in the SCL, Jared did, multiple things that are going to be shown in ISC over the coming weeks that are the 323 things. And I'm already, very encouraged,
yeah,
in comparison to last year, just by their, seriously, you know, saying that this is what we're going to cover.
Compare, like, that, oh, to, well, last year. Like, go, yeah, back and look at the ISC episodes that were playing in February, mm-hmm, and March of last year and realize that not a single one of them was about features. That, like, we were getting things like the lore, mm-hmm, villas being remade, right? That's good, and that was at CitizenCon, but then that showed up in the next patch because that's what was on ISC. So obviously, mm-hmm, last year, and this was, we were kind of leading up to 318, so we knew everything that was going on, but like...
Oh, and especially following 318.
Oh, right, God, yeah. 319 was, it was all just difficult because the game wasn't, mm-hmm, performing very well. Persistent entity streaming obviously threw a wrench in their development and slowed them down for mid-year. And then on top of all of that, now... they're just not showing us any of the stuff that we were actually hoping for. I don't know what, I think a lot of bad things occurred, or not bad things, but a lot of unfortunate things occurred at the same time that made last year, especially the months from like April till September, very rough. And we're now starting to see the fruits of that. Because like you said, they were holding stuff back for that CitizenCon. They held so much stuff for that CitizenCon, and it paid off in the marketing sense. But it became obvious to the players, I think, that they were clearly changing something communication-wise for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... I'm glad it's in the past. I hope we don't have to go through it again. Because, I mean, you, I was there for the 3.0, the drought leading to 3.0, and I remember what that was like.
I will say that was worse. Yeah, I think that was worse.
It was worse because there was less communication. There was even less communication.
Oh, God, we just got the burn down. Oh, my God. Yeah. Every week, the burn down. Y'all remember that? Is anybody getting triggered listening to this right now? That was...
Everybody's PTSD in chat from those years. We're going to trigger all those things, and then we're going to... But we're going to make it feel better with the rest of the show.
For anybody who wasn't around for that, 3.0 was, I mean, essentially what we're seeing with 3.23, the amount of excitement and change in that patch. Imagine that was thrown in with 4.0 and we were getting like the actual new star system. That was kind of how monumental 3.0 was. They announced it and it took them like a year and a half to get it out. And at that point, they weren't doing timed patches. They were doing content-based patches. So we went from like November of 1 year until I think December of the next year without a single new feature update.
Yeah, there was a couple little .x patches with little nothing burgers.
Yeah.
And it was
like balance was passes and stuff. Yeah. Whereas at least last year we were still getting a couple of updates throughout the summer and there was, you know, actual gameplay to do. But
you were able to see the progression from, you know, first 3.18 all the way out to 3.19.x, you were able to see the progression. It wasn't as much progress as we would have liked, but there was progression. And so you could tell that they were making a recovery, but it was, you know, it was pulling it out of a nosedive, and, you know, they didn't climb all the way back out, but they, you know, at least we didn't, smash into the ground like what happens when I fly.
So looking at where we are with all this hype and stuff going on with 3.23 and, you know, the talk about last year, you have a ton of context about Squadron 42 and what's going on with the company, as well as possibly a couple rumors or leaks in the background. What does all of this stuff that they've announced recently tell you about where Star Citizen is in development? Are they approaching beta? Do they want more people to start joining in? Is this kind of a bump, or do you think this is the beginning of the climb on like a roller coaster or some kind of weird metaphor like that?
No, that's actually a perfect metaphor. It hopefully it's not a climb and then crash, but, you know, it's or maybe we're climbing to get to the ride that we really want, because you do want those moments of, you know, abject terror and, you know, screaming and having a good time. So maybe it's not bad.
Tons of screaming.
Yeah, lots of screaming. It happens all the time when I fly. Ask the people in the back. You definitely do get the hints, especially reading the monthly reports, looking at the things that they're developing on, where the focus is, that this is the big, not the beginning of the lead up, but the next big step in the lead up towards, you know, where they're really going with the project and where they are targeting, where they want to be, because they, you know, Squadron 42 is going to launch, you know, when, we don't know. It's probably not that far off. Some people are, you know, optimistically thinking the end of this year. End of this year, first half of next year, you know, within the next year or two, it's going to come out. And so CIG really wants to make sure that when Squadron 42 launches, people are going to buy the game and they're going to finish the game and be like, wow, that was really great. Oh, I have access to Star Citizen. Oh, let's go check that out. And they want to make sure Star Citizen is in a place where, when people come over after the Squadron experience, that they experience that experience continues. And okay, it's you play the lieutenant fighter pilot in this game, but then in this game, you know, that's the whole, you muster out your civilian now, but it's the same universe. The game has all the same features. It all functions the same way. and it's stable enough that you can play it, and anybody who's played a multiplayer MMO type game, you know, okay, there's these issues, but otherwise it's the same experience. And so CIG is really working hard and sort of under the gun to make sure that that's what they get to by that time.
Right.
And it's a lot to undertake, because you know that all those features, that's one thing that I think a lot of people missed, is all those features that are Squadron based that they showed us at CitizenCon. They have until the release of Squadron to get those features into the PU and functioning appropriately, so there isn't a giant letdown for all these people who then buy Squadron after getting hyped for, or play Star Citizen after playing Squadron and being hyped for it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a decent amount of pressure, but at the same time, for those of us who are long-term or not even all that long-term Star Citizen players, it's a great time for us because we are finally getting all these things that are huge quality of life updates that make the game feel like that next gen project that they've been hyping for so long.
Yeah.
And make it feel that way. And you know, like you were talking about the ease of being able to play. That's one of the things that keeps me from playing it on a more regular basis. You know, I still play, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 hours a week, sometimes more if I have more days off, but it's hard to, you can't really drop into it because there are a lot of obstructions to the game that prevent drop in play. But a lot of what we're getting is going to really make that a whole lot more feasible to be able to drop in and pick up where you left off and yeah. have some continuation, some, you know, to feel that progress on a more meaningful level rather than, you know, oh, I logged off here and now I have to, you know, do all this stuff to pick up where I left off, and that takes the first 30 plus minutes or so. We're going to have to be bug tolerant, obviously, because with new features comes, you know, we're going to have to break the features to make sure they get polished in the multiplayer environment. But oh yeah, we're real good. We lots of practice, but I'm very excited about that. I'm a little bit worried about the amount of workload and pressure on the CIG devs in order to reach this goal, but I'm also really hyped for us as players to be able to get these things that are going to make our experience so the things that we've been complaining about for years over the next year are going to go away, because it's really, that's everything that they showed us at CitizenCon. It's like, hopefully. Oh, you're frustrated with the star map? Nope, not anymore. Frustrated with looting? We've got a fix for that. Those are the things that are the most impactful. And then there's new gameplay that's, you know, whoa, big changes to how we play the game.
Somebody mentioned that on my stream today. They called these band-aids, but somebody else clarified, I think, and called them placeholder. A lot of the things that are in Star Citizen, and that placeholder mm-hmm. feeling of this game has been around since we started, from the star map to the HUD. Like, literally, the HUD has elements that aren't mm-hmm. even used in it. The star map is made for a system that was 10 times smaller than what we're using right now. The ship interaction system was made when there were only two different types of buttons. Like, there are so many things that were placeholder, and 3.23 feels like the finally we're seeing these things replaced with the actual game system. And you said something earlier that these systems they're bringing in feel like proper game release ready systems. And yeah, that's another thing that I think makes it different this time, seeing these things, is that Star Citizen has always been pretty dang good at marketing, putting out trailers, putting out previs,
maybe
putting out
concept
art. Yeah, maybe sometimes too good. Not even maybe, definitely. But we've seen vertical slices. We've seen cinematic trailers. We've seen devs playing through the game. We've never seen gameplay that looked like it belonged on an actual console-ready release AAA game. And this mm-hmm. CitizenCon was the first time I feel like I ever saw that. That was the biggest thing I took away from it, was like, all of the stuff I'm seeing looks like stuff I actually want to play. Most of the other stuff I saw was just stuff I kind of want to learn more about. And that seems like one of the biggest reasons that this just feels different in terms of the hype.
Yeah, I could continue to play the game that we have, but with the next gen you know, release version features that we're getting, you know, the HUD, the MFDs, you know, both your ship HUD and your visor lens HUD, the star map, all these different things that make the game that you were playing right now feel like a game that's releasing in 2024, not a game that released in 2012, 2013, 2014. And I could play the game that we have now with those things for a long time, but it's not just the game that we have now. We're also getting not only the way we interact with the game, but the game that we're going to be playing in the future, the game that we're going to be playing for a long time with, you know, all the cargo stuff, all the different location types and the missions that go with them, you know, the updates to the flight model with master modes and what have you. You know, it's crazy that, you know, this 323 patch that's targeted for 2 months from now is going to give us a really good, it's going to reveal, it's not a full lifting of the curtain, but it's going to reveal a lot of, open up, you know, lift the curtain up high enough that we can peek down underneath and be like, oh.
Start to see what Star Citizen is supposed to look like. Yeah.
Yep. And Squadron.
Yeah. And Squadron. Nice little preview. Let's talk about some of those features you just named, because they're big features, and I think it's time we start to discuss the biggest features we'll be seeing in the next quarter, or maybe two quarters. We'll give them some wiggle room, because I think 323.1 will be a reality. Visor and lens is one of the ones that I immediately have some questions on. What do you understand the visor and lens system to encapsulate? Because it's very HUD focused, but there's also like the MFD casting and stuff that might not be. So in your opinion, what's coming with the Venzer and Lies, the visor and lens rework?
They've had this on the progress tracker as the AR marker, augmented reality marker. So basically, if something pops up, you know, visually, sorry, I shouldn't shut my camera, but off in the distance, you know, your little, hey, your waypoint icon, or this is where your mission is. But the way I understand it in terms of the visor part is everything that's going to show up on your HUD. But then there's also the things that show up on your visor if you have a helmet equipped. And so I think that everything they showed us at CitizenCon is pretty much what we're going to be getting, especially when it comes to the your player status HUD stuff that's at the bottom. But it's all those little contextual things where things pop in and out based off of what's going on with you and your environment, but they're not up there all the time.
Right.
The question is, but I think the thing that was a little bit hard for me to follow was, how does that interact with your ship HUD and your ship MFDs? Because they have it was a really monumental undertaking for the UI team to make all that work seamlessly. Cause right now it doesn't, there's no seamless. It is you have all your HUD stuff on your current visor and things overlap and don't always go away and cover each other up with what's going on your ship or your vehicle HUD MFDs. And so that's the part that I think that we'll probably need to set our expectations appropriately. Is if you're doing FPS stuff, I think it's probably going to be great. And with the FPS stuff that we're going to be getting, they highlighted, is going to work really well. And I have to go back and look at the roadmap because there's so many things, but I don't think we're getting the ship MFD and HUD stuff. I think that's, that's 4.0. There's I have a list of everything that Jared was swinging for the fences for in ISC at the end of last year and what he talked about for 4.0. And I want to say that's in 4.0. So I think that we're probably going to need to temper our expectations with how that interacts with what we still have, our legacy ship stuff.
Yeah. That's kind of why I was saying, like, the casting of the MFDs is one of the biggest things in terms of HUD improvements we can get. But the Venzer and Lies, there I go again, Venzer and Lies. Why? the visor and lens rework, good lord. It seems to focus a lot more on the FPS, almost like your actual, like they said, your visor and your lens. Do you think that, like, they're gonna at any point soon introduce this lens and allow us to have HUDs while we don't have helmets on? Do you think they're gonna make that delineation right now when they update the system, that you just won't get that info when you don't have a helmet on?
I feel like the I think that they probably need to give us a little bit more of an explanation on the lens part, because I feel like the way, and I'd have to rewatch it again, but I feel like the lens and visor thing, like lens might end up being, you have like a, almost like an ocular implant, or
I think they're like contact lenses.
Yeah, like a contact lens type thing. And so that stuff is always there. And then your visor is what you get, and it's going to be just like your ship MFDs and HUDs are going to be based off of manufacturer. Your visor is going to be based off of the manufacturer of the helmet you're wearing. And I think that that's all coming at the same time. That's the way it reads on the roadmap to me. I have to go back and look at it to make sure, but I feel like the two things are almost, they have to come packaged together. Kind of like the ship HUD and MFDs have to come packaged together. They can't come separately. It's a whole thing. And so I'm hoping that that's the, I'm going to be more optimistic on that side in terms of what's coming for that, just because I feel like they can't separate the two in terms of tech.
I guess we'll find out in whatever Inside Star Citizen they do about the new HUD, but it would be cool if they implemented that visor system. It's not super important because they already have you losing information based on taking off the helmet, but doing that would coincide a lot with reputation and life support and other reasons that maybe players won't want to be wearing their helmets all the time. So this, it could be pretty key. Those lenses in Microtech New Babbage will finally be able to put on our face.
I'm looking at my document, because that's the rub of it, because these are literal copies from the transcript of the ISC from December 14th. And then SCL. So December 14th, Jared said visor and lens system. But then in SCL last week, he says visor and HUD visual restyle. So maybe it's not including the lens. Maybe that's separate. Because it's not like they're given a specific card for lens. And so,
yeah, but on the roadmap roundup, it does say visor and lens system.
Yeah, it does say visor and lens.
So it says
visor and lens HUD rework.
Okay.
I think it's a holistic system that's entirely in a package. Like they can't.
We'll have to see what they do with that. That's an interesting one. But there's a lot of UI stuff. Then
what we get, because this is the Star Citizen version, not the Squadron 42, you know, military. What's the joke that people make about military tech? Military grade. We're getting the civilian grade versus the military grade one. And well, so what's that difference going to look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And there's a lot of UI stuff going on, this just being one of them. Another one that's probably an even bigger deal, I'd say arguably the biggest deal out of this whole list for players, is the new star map. And in general, just the new mapping systems. What are your thoughts on that?
So I had a 35-45 minute long talk with the UI team at the CitizenCon after party. They were the nicest people. And because the first time everybody saw them was at CitizenCon, no one knew who they were. So everybody was going and talking to the ship devs. And the UI team is sitting over here in the corner just sipping their punch and eating their snacks. And I was like,
how does people not know who Zane BN. I guess, yeah, Zane's not normally on camera, but he's been here for like 15 years.
he's for ages. And like the background for my podcast is Zane BN concept art for the star map. You know, Naz and I have been, I hate to say it, but we've been a fan of Zane, you know, and Team UI for years. And so they were really cool to talk to about the UI, but the star map is going to be absolutely huge. And I'm setting my expectations exactly for what they showed us. Because they did show us a lot, and I'm going back to
the... Yeah, do you think we'll get everything they showed us? Because...
So they say the star map rework, but then they also say the FPS map system. And that's two separate things. There's the star map, And then there's your, when they say FPS map system, they're talking about your, we've seen it in on ISC, that mini map up in the top, it was the left?
Yeah, top left corner.
Yeah. And that mini map and then your local map. There's three essentially different maps. Your interior map and your sort of local map and then the star map. And the star map is supposed to allow you to zoom down to the local view and have the local map. Your interior mini map is the part where they talked about and they said in SCL that not every location is going to have its interior mini map ready.
Yeah.
Which is what they use for the UI the resource management engineering gameplay.
I'm assuming that they mean just maps in general. Like there won't be a local map for those places. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because they're still working on the, what's the verbiage that they use for all the markups.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not every ship's going to have them. Not every location's going to have them. They're going to add more and more as they go. I feel like we're probably going to get the majority of it. Especially the big ticket items like your landing zones and your stations would probably be your priority. But I think your things like the outposts, especially like the old ones and the old UGFs, I don't think we're going
to
have.
Yeah, they don't need to map those.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to do those until they redo them.
So you said you're expecting the things they saw at CitizenCon. I'm a little skeptical because of the way that they phrased the addition. They said it will include a better interface and I think better trip planning tools, but they didn't really say anything about waypoints or map markers. They didn't say much about search functionality or how the filters works. Like, we don't know the details of just how much is coming in that star map. One of the biggest things you're looking at on the roadmap roundup?
In my list from SCL is a bunch of little sub bullets. Where does it say star map? Because didn't they say something about search functionality?
Yeah, I think search is search supposed functionality to be in there.
And that's the hard part, because like you just said, you mentioned a whole bunch of the actual functionality, you know, specific functions, and they made a general statement. They didn't specifically say what you said. They said a general statement for route planning, and route planning can include, like you talked about, you know, dropping waypoints and all that.
Or it could just be what we already do.
Yeah, it could just be click, set route. So that's the thing is, we don't know how inseparable those things are from the entire functionality of the star map.
Yeah.
Whether they can implement all of it or only a part of it. You know, because it's a holistic system. Yeah.
And that's kind of where the whole, is it like, manage the hype. It's fun to get excited about this stuff, but it's also good to read into these and try to, I would say, always read into them to try and scale back your expectations and see the details that are missing, and then start to wait for ISC and see what it clarifies. Because the waypoints is, in my opinion, the biggest part of the star map, besides it being usable. It's just saving waypoints would completely change how we play the game.
Well, and even like the route planning, what we have right now is unreliable. You can get it to set a route, but
you can't always get it to
close the map and open it again, and then, oh sweet, I got it to set and now it won't let me quantum to the point that it's showing right on my screen.
That's
whatever we get will be an improvement, but at the same time, like you said, they're, when they make vague statements, if they don't explicitly say, you know, because that's why we made all these little bullet points. You know, like for the economy stuff, the FPS stuff. If they don't explicitly say something, it's okay to temper your expectations around that, because a lot of times they'll use weasel words. That's another thing that Paul has said, and it's okay because if we don't temper your own expectations and you take something that's said one way to mean something else, you're losing some objectivity incorporating subjectivity into it. And that's where you can lead yourself astray.
Well, it's like It's like how Chris was out on stage saying, I hope that we can mostly get a lot of this into the game in the next 12 months. And like, he's clearly saying those words because he doesn't want it to be like, yes, all of this stuff will be there in 12 months, but that's how it's taken.
Well, and he said it twice. He said at the very beginning of CitizenCon, he said, most of what you're going to see, we're going to try and get in for the next year. And then the very end of CitizenCon, the quote that everyone remembers, he says, everything that you've just seen, you know, is what we're going to be introducing into the game in the next year. But so everybody heard everything, but they forgot when he said at the beginning of CitizenCon, he said most.
But even so in that statement, when he said everything, he still said, I think, almost everything or something like that. He still used words that you were like, okay, I see you. I know what you're saying. Okay. And, you know, we might get some features that do work mostly and don't have everything in there. I didn't expect, for instance, to be able to download maps in this first update.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they especially with kiosks and stuff, because that's going to require a lot of markup. You're going to have to add those to the little locations and such. Yeah, that functionality, I don't expect. And really, I think it's more of a taking what we have right now, adding a few more things in, making it actually work reliably and look good. And let's see, where's that list
The weird part will be, though, is adding in these mini maps for these landing zones or these locations, and then later on adding in the requirement of downloading maps, and suddenly people lose these maps by default. That could end up being frustrating to explain for CIG.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they really do need to give us some more information on how all that's going to work. Because it was show, don't tell, and they showed us these things, but it also opened up a lot more. It answered a lot of questions, but it left us with some new ones.
It really did. They haven't mentioned anything about FPS scanning. Do you think that's one of their surprises, or they're just not ready for that?
Well, and so FPS scanning, let's see, on the progress tracker has its own tile, right? So deliverable and FPS radar and scanning. And so if that has its own feature, I don't think we're going to be getting that, because it wasn't specifically mentioned in either the ISC at the end of last year or an SCL. And I think that that's its own separate item. It's not part of the star map, the holistic map system. And so I'm not expecting that anytime soon, especially because anytime soon can be like up to a year. You know, they showed it to us. They want to get it in the next year. But the things that Jared said in ISC for the first 6 months of this next year, as well as 4.0, which targeting summer-ish, those are the items that I'm setting my expectations for, but there's also some wiggle room on each individual items, especially unless he specifically mentioned certain things that during SCL last week.
Yeah.
The scanning, that's all, like, because it's one thing to have the tech working in the game. It's another thing to have the environments for the PU marked up to be
reactive,
ready for it.
Yeah. That's a big part of it. And I think that's something else that complicates things like engineering outside of ships specifically.
Yeah, I think they're more focused on getting the environment marked up for the different maps for that map system. And then afterwards, they're going to have to also follow on with, the FPS radar scanning is targeted for 4.0, 4.1. And they're going to release it, and they'll probably have the same thing. Hey, we got 80%, you know, 70% of the environment marked up for this, but not everything. You know, especially like some of the legacy environments, those are, hey, we'll get these done when we redo it via the procedural locations tool. We'll get this done when we redrop all of the old outposts via Rastar, because they'll be marked up then.
Yeah, that's one of those things that'll probably be an ongoing process, as are a few of these things. We mentioned the star map.
Well, especially for Stanton, I think that Pyro will probably be much more ready for these features when 4.0 drops than Stanton will.
Another thing that's getting worked on over time that we're just now starting to see some more work on finally after a long time of hiatus is Reputation. For a lot of people, this is the biggest edition coming, or at least planned for 323. What's your view on it?
It's going to be, I feel like this is the sort of first test because it's just hostility. And obviously Reputation is going to have a lot more impact on things besides just does someone shoot at you or not, or run away from you or not. But I think the getting that base functionality of the system in to see how it holds up with the game stability wise, you know, how long does it take for an NPC to react to you, you know, hey, see visual contact of you, recognize who you are and their reputation with you. How long does it take for them to process that and then get gun up? Versus just reacting to you pointing the gun and shooting at you. I think that it's going to be interesting to see how that works out in terms of what is it, how does it start to change people's play? You know, if you're used to, a lot of times people are only just worried about their crime stat. And this goes a lot further beyond crime stat. You might not have, you know, an active criminal record or an active, you know, wanted. You're not actively wanted. People aren't actively shooting you on sight. But you can go to a station after clearing your crime stat and still have negative reputation. And maybe, you know, you're still a shoot on sight. You know,
maybe you don't sell stuff to them. Like you can't buy stuff at that shop.
Sorry, you can't. Yeah, they won't buy. They won't sell to you. You know, how limiting is this going to be for people who normally spend most of their time living out of Grim Hex, but then they're used to being able to, you know, just go and wipe a crime stat and go do something, and now it's not going to be that way.
Yeah.
Because they don't denote how severe that impact is in the roadmap card. They just say that, you know, hostility is going to be there. Well, how much?
We also don't know, is this going to apply to every faction in the game? Does this apply to, like, mm-hmm. Crusader security, or is this just for gangs? Does this apply to individuals? Yeah, there's a lot more that can go into what does this reputation update mean, but it's nice to have, like you said, a long-term consequence for things that's not just gone from going and pressing a button. Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting complications, in my opinion, in this system is when you play solo in one way and then you play in a group with your friends in a different way. Like, what if you spend all your time in Stanton fighting for Xeno Threat and mobbing on Crusader Security or whatever, and then you decide to join your friends a month later and you go to Terra and you get like a job offer from the Tavaran Senator, but he doesn't give it to the group because you fight with Xeno Threat. Like, those kinds mm-hmm. of things are going to be really cool in guiding people throughout their gameplay. I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, this is that first step, but I think my hype for it is a lot more managed because I know the scope of what they're going for, and this is going to be a lot of steps.
Yeah,
this is going to be, you know, a lot of stairs, but I do think that it's going to make it a little bit more interesting and more dynamic. I don't know if it's going to affect people as much in terms of going to landing zones and stations, but I do think that if you incidentally run into pirates and you're, you know, law abiding, that, you know, yeah, they're going to attack on site, but I also think that, you know, you're probably going to have a lot more attack on site, you know, with the different security forces than you did before, because it won't just be, oh, well, you cleared your crime stat. Well, you served your time in prison, jail, or you hacked it or whatever, but they still hate you. And the Crusader Security doesn't care that you went and served your time at a UE prison. They're still going to dislike you. That there's layers of this reputation.
Yeah, it's a lot of subtleties that'll introduce things that aren't hitting you over the head, but might change your gameplay a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's dive into, let's see here. Actually, no, we got one more thing. I'm thinking, I want to finish up with the big features of 323 here, because I also want to talk a little more about the expanded view. Last thing I want to touch on today, and folks, if you want to learn more about this, our previous podcast touched on this stuff, video coming out later touched on this, and Video on the Second Channel is also reviewing these things. I want to switch our topic a little bit, though, after we talk about distribution centers. So the kind of highlight golden child, I think, of 323 is going to be the easiest to market are these distribution centers. But they're not quite everything we want, and we don't have a ton of info on them. What are your thoughts on these locations so far?
Let's see where. Okay, it's here, and the ISC is actually should be this next week. Is the ISC on distribution centers?
Right.
So
yes.
Hopefully, you'll be able to watch this podcast and then watch the ISC a couple of days later, and we'll have some more information and answers. Yeah. And that's the important part is a lot of people see, oh, they're introducing distribution centers, and we've seen the work on them when they were just called the new UGFs, and there's a little bit of confusion. Weird CIG with naming confusion.
Never.
But we've seen the work with the underground portion of the UGF part, and they did say that this is just the above ground portion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of those things where if you miss that part, if you didn't click on the tile, if you didn't read the roadmap roundup and you're not aware of it, that's a big thing is it's just the surface portion. But that surface portion is, part of what we saw, and they did say that it was going to come with missions. It didn't say what types of missions. And so that's another thing is if you're expecting to have a wide variety of missions at these distribution centers on first release, I think we're probably going to be disappointed. But having them along with the freight elevators and cargo missions, I think this is probably the biggest thing that I'm most hyped for is the fact that cargo haulers are going to have cargo missions and lots of locations to go to.
Yeah.
Because they're getting these freight elevators. Not only, what does the exact card say? Wrong tab. Freight elevators, implementation of systems and content for players to physically load and unload cargo to and from their ships by conveying cargo to and from hangars, landing pads, garages, and docking collars. So if you are a cargo hauler and there's a freight elevator, I feel like they can pretty easily make these cargo missions at every location that there is a freight elevator. And that's going to include these new UGFs. It's going to include the old outposts where there's pads, because that's what I'm expecting. Because in that sneak peek with the Cutlass, that was a little freight elevator right next to a pad that we're used to landing on.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going into the outpost and buy, sell cargo, we're going to be able to load and unload cargo at the freight elevator and do the mission that way. It's going to be a nice change of pace, but I think it's going to offer a whole lot more for people who want to haul cargo, people who want to do these missions at varying scales. That's a huge win, especially with the UGFs. And when they introduced the stations for the jump points with the whole sea, and it immediately added more locations, more crisscrossing for the whole sea owners to go to. Well, this is going to do that same thing, but exponentially more for haulers of all of various sizes. The whole sea isn't going to get to go there, but I think this is a huge win for people who like to haul cargo. And I'm excited for it.
Well, we know the economy team is doing some work, but I do hope that what we do see with these cargo missions and the cargo sort of work that's being done in general is that the locations actually have some consistency and reason for the stuff they're asking for and selling.
Yeah,
I know there is some of that right now, but if I'm going to get like a 32 SU shipment of medical supplies, I'm not expecting to take that to a small outpost somewhere. I want to take that to a distribution center or a city. And if I got a large amount of minerals, I would expect to be taking that from a distribution center to like a space station or something. And there's some of that there. I just want to make sure that continues and stays consistent. And with this explosion of locations, we also see an explosion of trade routes and interesting reasons to do that. And until we get crafting, that might not be very reliable because it's really all UEC right now.
And you did mention explosion of locations. We did just get a whole bunch of derelict settlements, and I don't know if all of those are going to have a freight elevator, and this is changing away from distribution centers, but and back to the distribution centers. You said explosion of locations. They only showed us four different ones at CitizenCon.
Right.
And that's what I'm setting my expectation for, is we're going to get four distribution centers. This is that first drop, just like they did with derelict settlements. We got, you know, a couple, and then they added more.
Yeah.
And so I'm expecting four, and it looked like they're all on Microtech. Sweet, that's great. It'll be cool to go visit them. They'll probably have a combat mission variant, or maybe a couple variants of, you know, some sort of raid, along with cargo missions for them, but I'm not expecting a lot in terms of variety, but there will be more. And I think the, you know, on top of the amount of work that it takes to build these, I think that part of it is, this is before server meshing. The server is still very full. And so there's only so much stuff, including locations, that they can jam into the server. And so I don't think we're going to see more distribution centers until after we get static server meshing. And even then, we're still looking at pretty full servers. And those distribution centers are big. And those are the medium-sized ones. They're going to be bigger ones.
Right.
Which is just nuts.
That's a big one, is we haven't seen the bigger ones. We also haven't seen the small ones. And they could have different plans for how those operate in the world. They might, before they had UGFs of three different sizes, now they might have distribution centers and then have something else that they just call outposts, and then something else that they call, I don't know, something big. There's still a lot of work to be done on these feature, on this location in particular. They also...
We'll get a second round like we have for the settlements, but I think we're also going to get a, you know, distribution centers tier two when they bring in the underground aspects.
The underground aspects, those cargo sort of like puzzles you can do, all the tunnels and data centers and stuff that they've shown down there in concept art. That's the probably mines. Something they'll talk about in ISC too.
The children yearn for the mines.
And, yes. They want to dig. Okay. Now I think we've touched on everything. I know you touched a little bit on the cargo and the freight elevators there. That's also a really big feature in 323. I didn't know if you wanted to go any deeper on that.
It's just another really big quality of life thing. A lot of people complain about it because they think that it's going to take longer. And yeah, it'll take longer to manually load cargo. But for people, you know, it's the economy team is adjusting that in terms of for payouts. So yeah, it might take you longer if you're manually loading and unloading your cargo. I forget what they said. I'm brain farting about what they said in terms of the automated part. Because Chad McKinney was talking about it in Spectrum. As far as I know, the automated unloading will still be there, but you'll have the ability to load and unload your own cargo, both for missions, but also, you know, your stuff you loot. But in terms of speed of being able to store and unstore things to prepare, you know, for, you know, GII to go and do an event, the amount of time it takes to prepare for that, I think, is going to go down a lot once used to that new system with the containers and the kiosk that they're getting for it. I think it, as interesting as, and cool looking as it is, I think it's a huge quality of life update in terms of being able to get into the game and start playing instead of getting into the game and, well, we're going to spend the next hour and a half, 2 hours planning, you know, to play. Yeah.
Well, this is our first time we've ever been able to have a home. We've always spawned in habs in this game, but you've never been able to re-enter that hab. It's never been the same one. For the first time, we will have a home in our home base hangar. Customizable.
Yeah, your personal hangar.
Put your boxes down in there. You put the armors and weapons and vehicles that your team needs for their event the next day. It will be there the next day. And you guys just all go inside, get your stuff, and go. There's no more figuring out, does everyone have the stuff they need? Where does it need to be sourced from? We got to go pick up the vehicles. Oh, this ship isn't claimed yet. Like, it's going to be a jarring change, but it's a lot more ability for us to enjoy the game how we want.
Yeah, there is definitely going to be a learning curve and an adjustment period. But I think once we get used to it, it's going to feel a whole lot better.
Indeed. All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that I'm interested in that hasn't explicitly been mentioned, but maybe has gotten some updates on the monthly reports or something. First, I want to talk about, obviously, The replication layer and crash recovery, these are kind of working alongside all these features. The hype for the back end and the front end of the game has separated a little bit. And the replication layer separation is something we've been waiting for since last year. It was supposed to happen. It was almost like an interim step in between PES and server meshing, but since they announced all of it, it's become a lot more of a big thing they're focusing on. Do you think that this hype will all be ruined by the fact that this stuff doesn't help with stability, or do you think that stability might take a step up with this replication layer separation? Whoops.
So we're getting a 323. I have no doubts that it will not be 318. Replication layer separation and crash recovery is not going to be 318 in PES launch. It is the replication layer exists. It just exists on the dedicated game server right now. And so it's taking that and moving it onto, you know, it can be on the actual physical server that the dedicated game server is running on. It can be on a different physical server that's in the same stack. Either way, it's the replication layer functions right now. And so they're just taking it and moving it and ensuring that it continues to function in the same way while also giving the server additional overhead in terms of performance, because it's the server isn't having to do all the things that the replication layer does. And so we're going to have some issues with this first release, even though we've had multiple patches. You know, it's like the fourth test now for it. We're going to have some issues on release. There's going to be some bugs, but just like with 318 got more stable, 318.1 and 318.2 and 319 and 319.1. It's going to be an iterative process, but I think we're going to, I'm very confident that we're going to start off in a much better place, because it's just a singular change and a singular point of failure that they've been testing thoroughly in the preview channel. And it's a much different situation compared to PES, which had, PES was brand new tech, but it was new. PES is a holistic system. It was 8 new services built into persistent entity streaming. And so when something went wrong, it was really difficult for them to track down where in this web of relationships with these 8 new services that the problem was occurring. Yeah. And so just statistically, it's a safer bet. But I do expect that we're going to have some issues. But at the same time, the crash recovery is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's a big quality of life change. Even if it doesn't work 5-10% of the time, maybe there will be a failure rate. The rest of that time, it's going to be a better experience than what we have right now. So I'm really stoked about it. You know, it's a big step.
Do you think it will be now, actually, let's clarify that crash recovery and the replication layer separation. Is this something that's going to clear up what a lot of players would describe as the jank that causes their gameplay to just not be as fun?
No, I think it will probably get better server performance on average. But this isn't going to be a lot of the jank of what we get is due to server frame rates. And that's just because the servers are so full and the servers having to manage, you know, 100 plus players distributed across the Stanton system doing all sorts of stuff. But I do feel that giving the server a little bit more overhead will allow for maybe a little bit more consistency in terms of better performance on average, but then having the crash recovery so that way when we do 30K, it takes a minute or two, you know, give or take, and you just resume. Mm-hmm. Instead of crashing back to the client, having to load back up and you're loading in a new server and you're starting all over again, it's the same. You just pick up right where you left off. You know, the NPCs that were in front of you, maybe, you know, they're jogging in place, you know, for a minute or whatever.
Yeah, but they do that.
That's the replication layer separation off of that is what allows you to stay connected to the server, you know, or to the other clients around you. And, you know, but as the server reconnects, it will resume the simulation around you. And so, you know, things will stay in place, but you'll still be able to, you know, there's it will continue, but sort of pause, I guess, That's a hard way to explain it, but it just
freezes
big step
on you and waits. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on the other side of stability,
and it doesn't start fresh when it starts back up again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's continues. Huge. Yeah, that's again, that quality of life update. So that way, if you do get disconnected, you're not starting over again. After you've been planning that GII event for the last hour,
as it happens. Mm-hmm. When it comes to stability, there's also another feature, another addition that has been actually less talked about recently, but we know still should help in some ways with at least client-side performance, and that is the Vulkan API and the things that the Vulkan API will allow engine devs to do to make the game run more efficiently. Doesn't necessarily mean the API is going to drop into the game and everything runs better, but do you foresee some improvements to game performance with that inclusion, what it seems like will be this year?
Yeah, that's definitely targeted for this year, obviously, because CitizenCon. The question is, we don't know when, because it wasn't mentioned in ISC at the end of last year. It wasn't in Jared's first 6 months or the 4.0 for summer. And so we don't know when that's coming or what's targeted with that. We also don't know when they introduce Vulkan, when does global illumination come? Does that come
the
with
good
it
stuff
or not? When does what's the other big ticket item?
Start getting ray tracing, DLSS,
ray tracing,
or
there you
upscaling.
Go. Mm-hmm. We don't know if those things are going to come at the same time. Are they part of a holistic package that isn't able to be separated and integrated in multiple pieces, or if it's all at once? I think it's another one of those things where when it gets released, we're going to have some visual bugs. There are going to be some thing, some memory leak things, VRAM memory leak things that'll happen. I think on average, everybody's going to see an improvement in performance and a lot of things are going to look better. But I think it's going to be it's probably going to be a bit of a slog for the graphics and VFX people to figure out, okay, what's causing this visual glitch? What's causing this to hang or crash? Because we're going to get new crashes. You're going to get new client-side crashes with it.
Ooh, who's replacing 30K?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to happen, because if this happens and your graphics card doesn't like it, it's going to crash. And your graphics card, this changes how the game does its CPU and GPU relationship of who's doing what.
Yeah. This is largely an optimization change.
It's a huge optimization change. And it's also one of those things that they need us to test this across the breadth of the Star Citizen community in time for them to take the feedback that we give them, constructive or otherwise, and implement that into Squadron. Because that's a big thing they're under the gun for, is if they don't have we're giving them that large scale testing on Vulkan when that happens, to make sure that things render and look appropriately and don't crash for Squadron when it launches. Because otherwise, the only feedback they'll have would be the internal testing that they've done on the feature.
Ah, like normal games. Gross.
Yeah. Ew.
Well, yeah. So stability-wise, the game sounds like it's going to improve a little bit this year, but still not maybe the big jump that a lot of people are waiting for, something that we might be seeing when dynamic server meshing is becoming more viable.
A lot of 2 to 3 steps forward, 1 step back over the next year, for sure.
That's what we do. That's how we do it around here. And it works.
It's the Star Citizen Tango, man.
It works. It gets them to a certain point where the game is comfortable and they can move on to the next step. Sometimes it's a little too slow, but I'm okay with, seeing some of these features that we're getting, like, say, the star map being an addition where we get a new star map. And, like, the main problems are solved. Maybe we're not getting downloadable maps. Maybe we're not getting placeable markers, but the new star map is a sign that that's coming along, and I appreciate that at least.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
All right, now I got a couple wild cards for you. Some things that we've seen a little bit recently talked about that might not be as well known, but could also blow this game up. Building interiors is entering White Box and the Montreal team, and given how many buildings there are in this game, that also seems like a pretty monumental addition. What do you think in timeline wise in building interiors, and what do you think of the feature overall?
I think building interiors are super cool, and it's a great way we talked about this on Paul's show on Captain's Table. One of the quotes that I think is really important for people to keep in context is from one of the Rastar presentations. They talked about giving us the greatest density of POI, places of interest, in a planetary system or on a planet as possible, because they want you, CIG wants you to stay, if your home base is Crusader, they want you to stay in and around, the Crusader planetary system for a long period of time, doing work, across the different platforms and going out to the UGFs that are on the moons and stuff and the outposts and everything, visiting the different stations. They want to keep you busy in a certain area for a while before you end up picking up and moving somewhere else. There isn't going to be a whole lot of, there isn't going to be nearly as much cross-system traffic as people think.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is performance thing, keeping you from having to transition from all these mesh servers too much. But with building interiors, that's adding on to that. We've got the outposts and the settlements and the space stations and the distribution centers or UGFs. So it's a lot of different locations. The building interiors is probably one of the biggest pieces of that puzzle, because it's taking the explorable, usable space of these big old landing zones that we have and exponentially almost increasing it. Because, if you look at Orison, if you look at New Babbage or Hurston, there's a lot of buildings. And every single one of those buildings that has a pad that you can land on, and probably some of the ones that we won't be able to land on, we don't know, is planned on having an interior. That's a crazy amount of playable space that we'll have the opportunity to use. I do think we need a lot more information on what the scope of that. What do they keep on calling? They keep on saying, using the word, the buzzword in the monthly reports, that it's like initiative or something, but we don't know. We got that that ISC on them, and it got everybody hyped because a lot of cool concept art, and it looked really cool.
It's very cool.
It doesn't give us a lot of the nitty gritty details in terms of the exact functionality and how much this will vary and how we get to them and interact with them.
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out, like with the distribution centers, where we're getting this first rollout of four of them, and it's only the top, the above ground portion. So what's that first rollout of building interiors going to look like?
I'm thinking residential areas, HABs.
Yeah, because they did talk about that. There's going to be the interiors are going to have different sections. Like this might be a commercial space. Is the first part just going to be the residential area and maybe the your sort of shopping mall on level four or whatever, and then office space after that? How will they break down how many buildings in a landing zone will have them initially? Where is it just going to be, four in each landing zone, and then as server meshing goes more dynamic, will they spin up more and more and more?
It's a lot of potential for that.
But we also need an update on the tool that they're using to build these, because these have to be procedural.
Mm-hmm.
And we know they have the procedural locations tool. Is that what they're using to build these? What process are they using to make this happen? So that way they don't have to handcraft all these building interiors across every landing zone in Star Citizen.
Yeah. Yeah. Building interiors.
It's going to require a lot of updates.
It's a lot of questions too. But that's a big one, and being announced this week that it is finally in white box. They started some work on it last year. We saw a little bit in a sprint report, but obviously it was shelved for a while for some of these other locations. I think Montreal is doing a lot of work with distribution centers. So they're moving on to this. It's not like distribution centers will happen and then there will be no locations. Building interiors are something we'll probably hear about a lot this year, but this is the kickoff, and it's very nice to hear that they're starting to see some work. That's a big topic. Something else.
I think that it's one of those things that I'm not going to expect too soon, because I really think that we'll probably need dynamic server meshing V1 for this to happen. I think it's a good way for them to test out dynamic meshing, so that way you could have 20-30 people go to a you know, an individual building within Microtech, and that server within my, that's managing, or not Microtech, New Babbage, mm-hmm. could then say, okay, the load is getting too much for me to manage New Babbage and these four buildings. We're going to subdivide it and make these four buildings a server, and then this original server will run the rest of Microtech. New Babbage.
I was thinking about that, but the amount of sub servers you'd need in a system to realize, I mean, especially like Stanton, like you have four cities all being, you know, could take up multiple servers. We're talking about 100 plus servers covering Stanton, or how far does that go? It's an interesting conundrum.
That's the dynamic portion of when the load for, you know, say it's these four buildings or all of the building interiors within New Babbage, when the load goes back down, then that server managing New Babbage picks it back up again. And so it goes up and down, but that's where they have to find out where that sort of limit is for a shard to say, because they obviously couldn't have all of Stanton and all of its entity zones each have its own server at the same time, because that would mean a player count that's ridiculously high and ridiculously distributed. So it's an interesting conundrum. It's an interesting problem for them to solve.
Yeah.
And I think that there's going to be some artificial limitations at first, but it's this is one way that they're going to be able to test that in the future.
Definitely. One of the other big pieces of news we've gotten this week, well, maybe not big, but people are excited about it. Some ship updates. We saw that both the Zeus Mark II are going through Greybox, the different variants of it. So that's pretty good. It's on track for second half of this year, I think. And the Polaris is in Greybox. Do you have any feelings about either of these two ships?
I bought the Polaris original concept sail in 2016. I've been a huge fan of the Polaris, because it's such it's going to be our first real combat capital that, you know, player owned in the game. But B, a lot of people, you know, see size 10 torpedoes and just start salivating, especially after the Citizen Con, you know, F the Idris bit.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Again, kicking.
Yeah, marketing
it.
Yeah. Again. Yeah. But it's the utility of the Polaris, I think, is really going to be appreciated a lot more over time, especially if you are playing in a group, you play with an org, because you can use that Polaris as a it's going to be the first time we'll have a more viable moving base of operations. Because, yeah, you can use your Carrick. It's got a lot of limited functionality because it's sort of a legacy ship. But the Polaris is an all-new, large combat capital ship with all the features. And it's going to be ready to support bounty hunting. It's going to be ready to support the next tier of medical gameplay. It's got a hangar that's going to be big enough for a bunch of different ships, you know, like the Legionnaire. is probably going to be coming out in short order. And you'll be able to fit a Legionnaire, a little baby dropship in there to go and do your FPS stuff at the distribution centers and then come back to your Polaris and then jump to the next area. It's, you know, torpedoes are cool, but the multiplayer functionality of the Polaris is really going to shine in a lot of different ways. So I don't think it's just getting into Greybox. I'm hopeful that it means that we'll get it in I think that they probably maybe wanted Invictus launch week, but it's not going to happen.
Oh gosh.
And so I think that Citizen Con IAE is probably a fairly safe bet. And so I'm incredibly excited for it, but it also, I think that having it come in after our first server meshing patch, you know, probably we'll probably be at 4.1, you know, looking like is when it comes in. I'm hopeful it's probably for the best.
Jeez, if we're heading 4.1 this year, I'd be very happy.
Yeah. I think that's to get those first 4.0 jitters knocked out of the way and then start introducing our first capital ship is probably a good idea. Yeah, and then resource management. It's going to be our first new ship and our first capital ship with resource management and engineering built alongside it, built with it in mind, versus this is a ship that we already have, and they're being retrofitted for it, if that makes sense.
It also is these large ships start to throw the idea of buying a ship for a mission on its head. You're not really getting a ship for a specific type of gameplay. You're joining the ship and then doing your gameplay where that ship allows. It's got a medical facility. It's got a brig, as was mentioned in chat. It's got a hangar bay. It's got a cargo area. It's got rooms and needs for people who do different types of gameplay. And CIG will have to figure out how to offer us both player, sort of more player emergent focused missions, and also I think NPC led missions on these ships that allow us to do that gameplay without necessarily owning the ship.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for it. It has a ramp to put vehicles into that cargo bay. They do need to figure out between now and then, because it as cool as the various functionalities of it that we just talked about are, it's got big torpedoes. Well, what are you going to shoot those torpedoes at when Xenothreat isn't running?
Yeah.
And CIG is going to need to figure out something for us to do with its primary weapon system rather than just, blow up the rich in the Origin 890.
There needs to be areas of this game that start to offer just ridiculously powerful and difficult to defeat enemies. And of course, people are going to try and go and do those in their F8s and all their other stuff. But there needs to be stuff that's made specifically for capital ships. And if you can take it out another way, so be it. But they haven't added these major ships into the game because there's been no reason for them. And now that they're adding them in, they definitely need to include some reasons, since that's been the excuse the whole time.
Yeah, it's another big step, but it's also going to come with some fumbles. And, the Idris and Javelin launching, with Squadron and after Squadron, but also following on the launch of the Polaris, I think are probably going to be an opportunity for CIG to be like, hey, this is what happened with the Polaris. We weren't expecting this. We learned from it, and now we've fixed it, and have added this along with these.
It's huge, man. I mean, you lost me at Star Map, but we've been talking about this stuff for about an hour and a half, or an hour.
You're
or so
supposed
now.
To not get lost and with the Star Map.
I mean, if it works. But we haven't. There's so much stuff we haven't talked about. Looking at the vehicles, there are other vehicles. You mentioned the Legionnaire. We've got the Zeus variants. You've got the Polaris. There's an unannounced vehicle that's reaching LOD Zero that's probably coming in Invictus week. There's a lot of stuff. Three capital
Multiple
ships
and variants
that you just named that are probably coming by the end of next year. There's just so much stuff at every single level of this game, from server meshing to new vehicles to new engineering gameplay to new ships to even the ray tracing is now, kind of an active discussion. It's just a lot going on. I want to finish this off by asking you. Yeah.
I think you made a post about it after CitizenCon, where you were posting about modularity from the ship's discussion.
Right.
And
yeah,
the Retaliator gold standard. It's like, what does that mean?
Yes.
What does it all mean?
That's also in the monthly report.
Mm-hmm.
Just so many things that we've been waiting for, and some of them that we forgot about, like with the physical interaction. That's not coming in 3.23, but the interaction system's getting an update in 3.23, and it should get physical after that. The idea of pressing buttons, though, and punching door buttons and turning wheels and all that stuff they talked about a long time ago, that I was just kind of like, maybe the game got too difficult and that's not going to happen. And now here they are whipping it out, and it's whipping it out. They're physically interacting, folks. I wanted to finish this off with kind of a question to you to answer the podcast episode. After all this talk and all the things you've seen, is the hype real? Should people actually be getting excited for Star Citizen gaining some steam? Is it feel like this is maybe not the dam bursting, as people will say, but this is not just some kind of a temporary bump where things are getting a little more positive. Do you feel like it's deserved hype for where the game's going?
I think it's definitely deserved hype. Just because I think they've really done a good job with the quality of the features that they showed at CitizenCon that they're starting to introduce with 3.23 and going forward. I really haven't seen a lot of negative feedback on people being like, oh, that's lame, or that, you know, this game does it way better. You know, a lot of people are really hyped because it's, you know, it looks good. It looks like it functions well. It looks like it, these features do a good job of balancing the immersion level with the approachability of the more casual gamer. You know, allowing you to do that very immersive gameplay, but also making it so that way it's still easy to get into. You know, you can still just press the button and things will happen. You don't have to do the full on
hold the button and search.
Yeah. It's a good. I think it's they're doing a good job of targeting a lot of people, and I think that's a good reason to be hyped. Not targeting a lot of people, but targeting a broad audience.
Yeah.
In terms of gamers. And I think that's a good reason to be hyped, because for so long, Star Citizen has been much more targeted on a much more narrow narrow market, or it hasn't been approachable to a lot of people. And I think it's getting a lot more approachable. And I think that because these features have been in development for a long time, even though we're going to have a lot of speed bumps along the way, I think that those speed bumps are going to be less jarring than they have in the past. And I think that's a good thing. We're used to these big, huge speed bumps. We've gotten through a lot of the big ones. We're going to have some more, but I think it's going to be a better experience over the next, you know, 1 to 2 years as these features get rolled out with server meshing, with Vulkan. I think we're probably going to have a kind of like a first day launch experience, second day launch experience for a lot of games, but it's going to be ongoing. And we've had far worse over the past several years. So people who come in and play a game on day one and they're like, oh, okay, well, I can see past these day one troubles and I'm going to continue to play the game and enjoy it. Well, we're going to have day one troubles. Yeah, we've been doing that dialed up to 11. We're going to have day one troubles with, you know, these different features, but they're going to be in a way that it's going to be a much better game and a much better experience for a lot more people. And it's good for me and you who have been here for a long time. It's good for the new people who are going to be coming in probably in droves. So I think the hype is definitely real, but I think it's also perfectly reasonable to manage your own hype and maybe not dial it to 11, maybe dial it to 8.5.
It's definitely, you said these are features that target more people, and that's a really good way of putting it. We've gotten excited in the past for medical clinics, for tractor beams, for persistent entity streaming. It's like the biggest thing that ever happened to this game, but it's hard to build legitimate hype around that for all types of players. You can't miss when you're releasing a star map. Everybody's is interested in that. Everybody wants to see the UI improve. So I think you're spot on when you say, like, these are features that aren't just being added to push somebody's experience forward or push a career path forward or salvage forward or something. These are the types of things that improve the whole game in long running ways. So yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time to be looking forward to it. It's going to be a hard time for the next 2 months waiting for it. 2 months, I hope. But
oh yeah. Well, don't. Here we go.
But yeah, Tree, that wraps us up for today. I want to thank you so much for giving me so much of your time. There's so much to talk about. We didn't get to touch on it all, but folks, if you want to get more, I'll be posting plenty about these updates, and Tree, you as well will be posting, I'm sure, and talking about it. Where again can they find that stuff?
twitch.tv/tree0311. YouTube, it's youtube.com/@tree0311 is how they're doing the linking system. Tree0311-SC on Twitter. And then my Discord is an always open invite. So if you have questions about anything, if I don't have the answer, I will find someone that does, or we can find it together. Hop in my Discord. I'm almost always available. Because there's a lot of stuff to be confused about. So, you know, come and hang out and let's chat. Come watch the show live. Come help support stackup.org. Really appreciate any support that you can give. But just happy to be a part of this community. It's a great community, a lot of really good people, a lot of great conversations and fun things to get hyped about. And
yeah,
you know, we can even have fun managing our own hype and tempering expectations.
Yeah, it's like a mini game in a mini game. Any final thoughts on what we've talked about, what they've shown recently before you go?
Oh, I'm just super wreck diving. That is my gameplay. That is, you know, everybody's like, oh, you're a Marine, you want to go do all the combat stuff. And it's like, no, I'm really interested in wreck diving. Morph specifically said the term when he was on your show a while back. And this update is probably going to be a big improvement for my most desired gameplay in terms of wreck diving and going and finding things and looting them and taking back and putting them into the freight elevator, or being a just a hermit and a what's it called when everybody just
a hoarder
fills their house with junk? A hoarder.
Yeah,
I'm gonna have a hoarder hanger because it's gonna persist. It's gonna
you're gonna open your ship and just like boxes are gonna come flooding out.
Yeah, I'm gonna invite people to my hangar and be like, oh, you have problems.
I do. It's called Star Citizen. Yeah. All right, Tree. Thank you so much for joining me. And folks, thanks for coming and watching the podcast. If you don't like ads, we don't have them on the audio platform. So if you're looking for an ad-free experience, check out your favorite podcast platform. Search Space Tomato, Star Citizen, Launch Sequence, whatever you will. We also have two other podcasts, Citizen Central and Greenhouse, you can find in the same way. But they're all supported audio-wise by our supporters. Patreon, YouTube, Twitch, Ko-fi. You guys make this stuff possible, and for that, you're able to come in here and watch the shows or listen live, even talk with our guests before and after the show on occasion. It helps us keep the audio platforms ad-free, but it also keeps the audio nice and high quality, and we don't have to put in, like, I don't know, Cutco ads or something. Either way, hope you've enjoyed the podcast. We will be back with you with some more good information next week, as there's always some good info coming out. But I've been your host, Space Tomato. Tree, once again, thank you for joining me. Hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, my man.
You too, bud.
And I will see all of you next week.